Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. Does the economy have you down? Do you need a new mindset? Do we need to look at new opportunities for the future? Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about why we're, and we did a show last week about why we're where we are at. And we even seem more stuck lately. And I wanted to look at that sense of stuckness with our guest, who's back again, the author of the book Memeonomics, The Next Generation Economic System. Sounds good to me. Love the book. And the author, who's our guest, is Saeed Dolabani. Saeed, welcome back.
Thank you, Peter. Thanks for having me back.
I'm so glad, because right now, this world is in a stew, and we need to help it out. So we're going to talk. I've been processing this week from the information from your book why we're so stuck. What are our fears? And my sense is that there's huge fears of the blue and the red level systems that we've been through, and to the point of psychosis.
Yeah. Sadly, Peter, where we are today is a place where fear besets the system, and because you have so many conflicting and polarizing political views, people are easily manipulated into thinking that this is the proper way to think, this is the proper politician to support, this is the proper economic policy to support. And these disruptions, if you will, are all signs of where the values of this culture are, and the memeonomic values that we're experiencing now, and I talked about this last time on your show, is that we're in this, we've entered this green value system that seeks the democratization of information. And compared to maybe, 20, 25 years ago, if you recall, Peter, you know, we had maybe three or four sources of information at most that were shaping our opinions, our views on things, really our values, and only two political systems through which we can express who represents our values best. What you're seeing now is that democratization of information, that, you know, anybody who's capable of writing a few words in a blog all of a sudden has a following, and suddenly you have a very diverse platform for people to view who represents their values best. So you're beginning to see the problems with the system that the old values can't handle anymore. So this is an issue that really, I don't have the answers for, but it can no longer, the problems can't be solved from a two-party political system anymore. And, you know, I'm not a constitutional scholar to start talking about, well, we can't really be in a two-party system anymore, nor should we talk about coalition governments. I don't think the nation is ready for that kind of conversation. But that's where the future is heading. Based on the value systems model, that's where the future is heading.
But the problem with information, the information age, is that we have to learn to use it better, because it's not all objective. And
Correct. There
are even large groups out there that share talking points of distortion that really frighten the public to the degree that they become enraged and crazed and are spouting all kinds of information that's been distorted. And a lot of that is based on fear, and a lot of that is fear from the past that should have been resolved. We should understand that blue level system, the fourth system, where everything was programmed, it was structured, it was much too stuck in its framework.
Right.
That it got corrupted that way, and and it was horrible the way it was being used. And so many people are afraid that that's what the other side still wants.
Peter, the reason for that blue system that you're talking about, that fourth system becoming corrupt, is that, in our model, we have it is a two-legged model that says a system has to always be in touch of the changes in life conditions. What happens is when you get a hulking bureaucracy like we did, that we built over a four-decade period over the New Deal era, beginning with the New Deal era in the 30s, on to the 70s, we put an infrastructure of laws and rules and regulations that became institutions that stopped being in touch with where life conditions, where the values of the culture has moved to. And what we're experiencing now is a rejection of those values. I can't tell my kids to sort of look up to the same rules and values that I looked up to. Their values, especially that they're young adults now, are being derived from the total cultural system that delivers that information to them. We all hope that that we raise them right, and then they have certain values. But that's only a piece of what we contribute to building that moral blue. The rest of it is where life conditions are in culture. The totality of culture gets its information, gets its values from an evolutionary system that the political system is no longer in touch with, and that is what we're rebelling against. The blue system, if you recall from my book, really became impotent over the last three decades.
Right, but a lot of people don't respect that's passed, and so there's so much desire now by extremists to kill government because government reflects blue to them. They don't see beyond the blue.
Well, I don't know what else is left to kill. I mean, from an economics point of view, right. I don't know what is left to kill. It seems to me that we are no longer in a representative democracy, Peter. I mean, you speak to any constitutional scholar, and the underlying theme is that we are no longer a government of the people. We are a government that is beholden to special interests and lobbyists. And that is not the original purpose of the Constitution. That is not the prime directive of the founding fathers of this country. And so you get forces that believe that any government regulation is now bad for people. It's bad for the health of the economy. It's bad for bankers. Well, guess what? Bankers, because we bailed them out because we didn't have a system to check whether they needed to be bailed out or not, are doing it again. We're on the cusp of facing another financial catastrophe. There are bubbles beginning to form in housing, bubbles beginning to form in asset markets, in commodity markets, and the government is incapable of regulating that. So tell me, where is there government in business that needs to be deregulated? We have deregulated to the point that there's nothing to deregulate anymore.
I think we've left the fifth level system of Orange, which is where we've been in, which has all that deregulation in it, and we've gone back to the third level system.
Yeah. It's the model, Peter, says that in absence of an effective fourth level system that regulates industry, that is the facilitator of the fifth level system that is visionary. So you sort of like a new regulatory system that is in touch with what I described earlier, in touch with life conditions, that is evolutionary in nature. It's sort of it's an accommodator of commerce in a good, responsible way.
Yes.
It sort of blazes the way for business to say you should be directing your efforts in this direction, in order for you to not only serve the bottom line, but the health of the people and the planet as well as your bottom line.
Right, and that's very responsible. And the orange, this fifth level system that we've been in, has lost touch with that.
Yes, absolutely. And it, you know, as I say in my book, Peter, it doesn't go out and break the laws like a third level system would. It works on the long term effects of making sure it numbs the laws. It corrupts indirectly. It puts politicians in its pocket, so to speak, in the long term, to really mute any effects of laws, and manipulate enough that people of the average voter cannot see the effect of what they're doing. And,
right.
and this is really a problem that the next system has to deal with. We cannot do this from the existing current fourth level system. You know, that's why I talk about the future being based on what I call a smart blue system, a system of laws designed from the seventh level of values. Mm-hmm. You know, you're beginning to see the emergence of politicians from that system, people like Elizabeth Warren, you know,
right.
who...
Mm-hmm.
You know, listens to bankers do testimony at the Senate Banking Committee, and after hours of testimony, she says, "Well, so it was unethical, but you still went ahead and did it anyway." So she sees through, you know, whatever manipulation games they play, and she also, you know, puts the banking regulators up there. So you can't. You're telling me you can't regulate after they testify for hours. You need a politician with that kind of courage that sees through all those things that you know, the traditional banking industry and their regulators and whoever's entrenched in the old system puts up as a you know, I'll tell a story, and maybe, you know, regulators because we have them in our pockets won't you know, we'll just do this as an academic exercise instead of really effecting change. So you see people like her, you see people like Paul Volcker, who, you know, I mentioned earlier, I think last week, you know, he was the head of the Federal Reserve for the longest time, and he really saw where the economy needed to be 20, 30 years down the line, not where bankers needed to be the day after the financial crisis. And so you kind of need those kinds of political leaders that are going to define the future of government.
Well, I think we should all believe that in our midst, there's genius and wisdom that can bring us forward. It's just that their voices aren't being heard amidst all of this craziness that's going on. And maybe there are two ways that the future evolves. One is through collapse of current systems, and the other is through the Phoenix rising from the ashes with these people and these processes that you talk about in the book, and you give examples of visionaries who are in the marketplace now creating new understandings of how things can work. And also, you also talk about how the information age is pushing the economy and business in new directions that are much more localized, and we don't need to depend on major corporations and major factories, and it can work on a smaller scale based on our inspiration and our aspiration to move forward.
Right. Yeah, two points to that effect, Peter. The first that I want to make is paradigm shifts. You know, we talk a lot about, you know, why don't people see the danger of what's happening? We talk about why isn't change taking place? And this is a good point to talk about what paradigm shifts are. You know, usually change doesn't come from within the system. It comes from visionaries. From people, really, people like you, Peter, who see the importance of you know, the continuity of life beyond the life of the bankers, beyond the life of the current political system, and take to the airwaves and talk about it. You know, I'm really surprised at the success of my book, Peter. It seems like the system is ready for the change. People from the mainstream are beginning to pick it up and say, yeah, this is something we can relate to. The current system, yeah. There are a million books out there about econometrics and everything else. There are no other books that take the value systems approach that sees, well, you're doing economics, but as a part of what? As a part of continuing the current system, or as an overall, cultural science that sees at the core that the purpose of economics is the betterment of society as a whole. It's no longer a closed up mathematical model housed in silos in academia somewhere, but someone develops a better model for it to start using it. So you're beginning to see a paradigm shift, and it starts taking place through first visionaries, through a conversation that starts becoming a meme, that starts taking root. You see it in different places, and then someone within the political system would notice that, wow, this is a new platform from which we can redefine our political values, because that's what the culture wants. And so when you start seeing more explanatory power coming from the new paradigm, you'd notice that culture is then ready for a tipping point. Whether mm-hmm. we're ready for that yet or not, I don't know. I think we're maybe a decade away from those new values setting in, but it also depends on whether the politicians really wake up and realize this is no longer a system that serves the majority of the electorate.
Right, but there's such an entrenchment and corruption of politics at this point. And I'm thinking in terms of people who are breaking into new territory, for instance, with paying workers. And, there is this, I guess I would call it the old red level system of power mongers treating the slaves poorly. And so there's such a resistance to raising the minimum wage among politicians and corporations. And yet there are companies that are paying very high wages to lower level workers that have become very successful.
Yeah.
And those are visionaries that we want to hold on to.
Yeah, absolutely, Peter. I was asked before, what do I think of the pay of top CEOs, the Fortune 500 CEOs and people on Wall Street? And I said, well, they should be paid in pink dollars. And I got that from the toughest sheriff in America, Sheriff Joe in Arizona, that used to make his prisoners wear pink underwear to humiliate them. And so when a banker or a CEO goes to pay for his sandwiches and he's paying in pink dollars, it'll be $5,000 for the sandwich. I mean, this is the kind of disparity that we have developed, that we have allowed to develop in pay. The gap between the hourly worker and the executive or the investment banker is at an all-time high. And this is reminiscent of pre-Great Depression values. I mean, we pride ourselves in being the leaders in the fifth level system, but the fourth level system has diminished so much that we're defaulting back to being those brutal business people who really don't care about who got us up here. And it was the working class that got us up here.
Right. But you talk in the book about how we're moving forward through local economies of entrepreneurship and also through the visionary experimentation, let's call it, but they believe in it, of the heads of, for instance, Whole Foods. I think Costco is doing very good by its employees.
Yeah.
And yes, go ahead.
Yeah. So the economy of the future, Peter, is being shaped by two different forces, but they are forces of what we call the second tier system. These are the values of the seventh and the eighth level system. The first one and the one that is based on the nature on the conscious evolution of the nature of humanity is the value system that is informing the conscious capitalism movement. You get, their driving force is the holistic interdependence of the planet. That is a value of the eighth level system, which really there's no representation of it now, except that it informs, it is such a high level of consciousness for humanity that all it can do now is inform the current values of what the future looks like. So that model has the, instead of a stockholder model for businesses, it has a stakeholder model. And the stakeholder model, treats profit, people, and planet equally. So it is no longer beholden to the stockholder and the returns that just address the health of the stockholder. The stakeholder is a part of the equation, and that stakeholder is the employee, is the supplier, is the food supply chain itself, and the planet itself. So imagine someone including the planet as one of the stakeholders, the planet that really does not influence the bottom line, but in the long term, it is the only bottom line that matters.
Right, but it doesn't, as you say, it doesn't sacrifice anything. It brings everything together. It's an integral system,
right.
And it's, as you said last week, it's a win-win-win. It wins on three levels. And everybody comes out ahead because it actually is a successful model for everyone, including the stockholders, who aren't sacrificed.
Right, right. The important thing to keep with that model, Peter, and I've gotten a lot of criticism for saying that the conscious capitalism model is a potential eighth level value system. The problem with that is that it has to meet where life conditions are today. And life conditions are in corporate America today are in the fifth level. So when a corporation becomes initially informed by these values, it is just moving the corporate culture from an unhealthy, closed fifth level system to an open fifth level system. And really an open system is a very important issue in making the upward emergence of consciousness a very important thing. So that's what's happening with conscious capitalism today, is that more corporations are becoming informed by its values, but they have to start from where life conditions are. It has to meet culture where it is and begin the hard work of changing cultural values. Now, the other model that is emerging is really the knowledge economy itself. As it matures, as it continues to sort of differentiate its bits and bytes, it begins to create a seventh-level economy. And, a big part of that, Peter, is the transition of the current knowledge economy that is in what I described last week as the green values, the sixth level system. So in order for us to really empower a seventh level yellow economy, okay, we really need to move from the current values that democratize information to values that functionalize knowledge. Okay, now there's quite a bit of difference in that. You don't want to give out the information to just anybody. I mean, the big conversation today is about big data. Big data is nothing but raw material.
Right, so how do we make use of it? And that's the functional part that you're talking about.
Yes, exactly. That is the functional part. And it's not just information. It is the shaping of that digital universe on how to make it functional to bring back manufacturing. I talk quite a bit about the advent of the 3D phenomenon, the modular manufacturing that every kid who doesn't want to go to college doesn't have the capacity or the expenses to go to college the money to go out. You know, these are the kinds of things that enable someone to set up a factory in their own garage. You know,
well,
it won't.
Right.
You know, it's the size of a microwave. That's the you know, those no new 3D manufacturing machines. You know, and you could be manufacturing you know, little fasteners and gadgets that you can, you know, supply to your local hardware store.
Right. We're not here to mold the kids from what we know. They're here to create the future from what's inside of them. And there's been some research with education in India where they gave kids computers without education, and they let them go. And it's amazing what these kids were able to do on their own. But we're down to 2 minutes before the end of the show, and I would love to even talk with you more. But I think for now, I love this information. I think people need to go out and get your book, Memenomics, Memenomics, The Next Generation Economic System. Your name is Saeed, S-A-I-D, E, middle initial, Dawlabani, D-A-W-L-A-B-A-N-I. How can people move forward from this?
I suppose at the core of it all, Peter, is having optimism and being and becoming politically active again. You know, if you want to buy the book, or even just go to the website where there's a lot of free information on what the values of the seventh level system are.
What's the website name?
Memenomics.com.
Okay, great.
And just inform yourself on what to look for in a seventh level political leader that will, you know, affect, you know, whether you're going to have job security 10 years down the line. We really need to create a new political leadership in Washington without which politicians or business will still hijack the political system, really making the net effect of everything we do sort of obsolete. We need to start a grassroots movement that sees the corruption that's taking place now and looks to create a paradigm shift that will bring on these values.
Saeed, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure to speak with you. I do want to connect again in the future and catch up on how this is all moving along. Thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
Thank you so much for having me, Peter.
Sure. This is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, H-E-A-R-T, river.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you. There are a lot of classes going on, teleclasses even. Please tune in, and thank you so much for listening.